You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Vox and Hop's Brutal North America is presented by Indie Merch Store.
When I show up to destroy. And that is just who I am, and I expect it in return. I don't do anything without expecting that it is possible or necessary for it to be done to me the same. So my rhetoric has always been, or I should say my position is always like, the only thing that stops me is a ref gets in the way, and that's it. And I have who's in my corner, and everybody else is my enemy.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Triptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians to talk about their lives, music, and craft beer. I hope you had a glorious weekend. I most certainly did, because Brutal North America is here. That's right. This whole week, there are 22 unique new Vox and Hops collabs, which are dropping all across the United States and Canada. I am so damn stoked and proud of this project. I have paired 22 Vox and Hops alumni with metal breweries across North America to create unique collabs for their bands. To name just a few of these amazing collabs, in Canada, we got Brewski with Acurian, Cannery Brewing with Unleash the Archers, Kanawake Brewing with a brand new Cryptopsy collab. We got New Level Brewing and Striker. We got Overhop Canada and Beyond Creation. In the United States, we got Bone Up Brewing Company with Fuming Mouth, Broken Goblet Brewing with Hath, Cosmic Eye Brewing teamed up with the RRBG podcast, and we got Ghost Town Brewing with Labored Breath. So many cool beers, so many amazing humans working together to spread Vox and Hops' motto of enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. I'm just so damn excited. Brutal North America is presented by Indie Merch Store, is fueled by Heartbeat Hot Sauce Company, and is powered by Yakima Chief Hops. So if you can, head on out there and seek out some of these collabs. I would love to see some photos and to hear some reviews about what you guys think about these amazing, unique brews. If you'd like to find some more information on Brutal North America, you could head on over to my website, voxandhops.com. That's voxandhops.com. And there is a whole bunch more information about Brutal North America there. This Vox and Hops episode is presented by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal is Montreal's premier metal promoter. They put on a bunch of sick shows throughout the year, but more than that, they also put on one of North America's best metal festivals, and that's the absolute truth. I've played festivals all across the globe, and Heavy Montreal are up there with the best of them. They have just started announcing some shows for the fall coming up. They have announced that Ginger will be coming through Montreal with Suicide Silence. They've announced that All Them Witches will be coming through in December. They've also announced that Bloodbath will be coming through in 2022, as well as that rescheduled Rammstein tour, which will be hitting Montreal in August of 2022. I am super stoked to have Heavy Montreal behind the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. Before we jump into today's episode, I'd just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I'm also asking you to rate it and write a review, because when you do that, more metalheads just like yourself will be able to discover the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. Now, why do I say this? I say this because when someone is looking for a new podcast to listen to, what do? They scroll down, they look at those reviews. If that podcast has a bunch of great reviews, what are they going to do? They're going to give that podcast a chance. So if you were to write a review for the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, you could actually be the person that helps sway someone to become a new Vox and Hops head. And that would be something that I would truly appreciate. Now, on today's episode, I am with the world's most extreme metal athlete. This is Vox and Hops episode number 275 with Josh, the Warmaster Barnett.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today I'm with Josh Barnett, the Warmaster, the
extreme fighter, the metalhead. I am so stoked to be with you. Let's start with an easy one. How you doing, Josh?
It's good. I'm up in Washington visiting family. It's a nice getaway.
Awesome. Let's dive deeper. Let's go darker. I like to kick this off with something a bit more shitty so we can have fun later. How did you cope with the glorious year that is now behind us of 2020?
It's tough because there wasn't really much cope. It was one of my best years ever. I was busier than I could ever remember, making all kinds of projects happen, traveling, doing all kinds of stuff. So 2020 was actually really fruitful.
Good.
But at the same time, I realized that there were it was a complete shift in the way that things were operating. And in some ways it was good because it allowed me to work on things that were often not even second in command on the list of things to do. And so it allowed me to reach into those things and work in these areas that I'd been neglecting, but also to think a little differently about how I was approaching just the things I was doing.
That's smart. It's sometimes just giving that obstacle and having that little inch of time really helps motivate us to adapt and change our whole way of thinking.
Well, oftentimes people get not to say that I'm necessarily thinking that restrictions are always a necessity, but how restrictions can be a great motivating factor for creativity. And so being as that there were restrictions, there were things that I really couldn't, there wasn't anything I could change about it, but the way I could, what I could do is change the way I approached my day-to-day, approach business, approach other things. And, you know, I have to find a way to shift. And I did.
That's amazing. You know what excites me and gets me motivated? It's craft beer. Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends, talking about their life, music, and craft beer. What beer are we going to be virtually sharing? What beer do you have on your side today, Josh?
I mean, I don't know how you this really I mean I would not consider this craft, and I do love me a good beer regardless of its origin, but this is just good old Vitamin R. I usually buy it when I come back to the Northwest, that in Olympia, and I'm more of a craft or just whiskey person in general, but I like all things fermented just about, as well as distilled.
I love that. On my side, I'm drinking something brand new. They actually just opened today. They are my neighborhood brewery. They are seriously like a 10-minute walk from my house. Makes me so excited. This is Melon. This is their first stout that they dropped. I was actually their first paying customer this morning. I dropped in, and I was the first paying customer, so I'm very excited about this. This is La Nuit est une panthère. It is a imperial stout with chocolate and coffee. They got the Zab coffee in this. 10%. Best way to start off a Saturday. I'm going to crack this, and Josh, tell me about your very first beer.
You know, I don't recall what it was. It was something probably as run-of-the-mill as it comes, and I don't remember even particularly liking the taste of it. But then I think that even if you're just drinking something as simple as a lager like this, the natural notes that you're going to get with beer, you know, things brewed from hops and what have you, it's like drinking coffee for the first time. It's like these certain, or even smoky Islay whiskeys. You have to have a palate for it, and you have to develop it to a degree. I mean, I know that there must be people out there that the instant that they'd ever tasted hops or coffee, if they were done. But I wasn't that guy. It wasn't like a real battle. It was just a matter of expanding my palate. And that went for all kinds of different foods too. I mean, there was plenty of stuff that I didn't like as a kid that over time, without really even trying, I developed a taste for things that I used to hate and enjoyed them. Same with beer. I didn't hate beer, but it didn't click with me. But over time, it really started to come into its own. And, you know, if it's my preference, it really depends on my mood. I really do like nice, easy drinking lagers and some pilsners. But generally, my personality goes towards stouts and porters and things of that nature.
Hell yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cheers. Ooh, coffee. Boozy. Smooth. Oh, the chocolate kicks you. And then the booze at the end. Killer. Super stoked about Melon. Let's talk about being a metalhead. Another thing is, you know, an acquired taste is metal. The first time I heard Cryptopsy, I didn't like it. And now I'm the vocalist of Cryptopsy. So it's sort of like that, too. So talk to me about, I want to go back and get into young Josh, the soundtrack of your youth. When you were growing up in your parents' or guardians' house, what music was playing when you were not in control of the radio? What music did your parents or guardians listen to?
Almost entirely classic rock and blues was the nature of the game. And I mean, you got all your classic rock staples like, you know, Led Zeppelin and CCR, or I mean, you'd hear it, all the radio station normals. But my dad was a big blues guy, so, you know, that would be Yardbirds and Savoy Brown and the Chicago Transit Authority, not Chicago with Peter Cetera as the lead, but Home Dude, the guitar player. And so that was what was, you know, and Steely Dan, even plenty of that. And then from my mom's side, I'm a big fan of classic rock as well. But then that's where I was introduced to things like classical music. And even some jazz. And from that, you know, I developed, I guess I must have developed some kind of an ear towards, you know, rock music and blues and some of those patterns. And then this kid who was older than me at my babysitter's, it was a metalhead. And I remember seeing his Iron Maiden t-shirts. The first one that really stuck out was the album cover to Killers on a shirt. And I'm like, I don't know what this is, but I need this in my life. There's something about this that I just have to have.
It's like scary but intriguing. Same thing happened to me at a babysitter. I spoke about it recently on a podcast. The Alice Cooper poster in this guy's room, Timmy, shout out to Timmy, totally scared me but intrigued me 100%, and I needed to know more.
Yeah, for me, yeah, it was Brian Roberts. And then it was Bon Scott, AC/DC, Wasp, Metallica, all that. And that started me down the metal journey. Of course, Judas Priest, it was everywhere. And Iron Maiden was my favorite band for most of my youth, like far and above.
What would have been your very first show, the first live music experience?
The first live music experience, surprisingly, actually wasn't until I was in high school. I think it was 16 or so. And it was a free concert at Seattle Center. And they had this big grass area with a stage that was built in, and KISW, the local rock station, was doing these concerts called Pain in the Grass. And it was Candlebox and Jesus Lizard open for them.
Wow. Good first step right there. Yeah.
So, I had never heard of Jesus Lizard, but they were badass.
Absolutely.
And even though it was Candlebox, which is not very heavy per se, and it's of that grunge era, man, I mean, there was a mosh pit. And it was funny because I took my friend who was the hip hop head. And when I mean that, I mean, he was how I found out about East Coast hip hop and things that had a more like a jazz bent and all that kind of stuff to it. You know, really more into the deep lyricists and things like that. And I mean, there wasn't like, he wasn't into any of the West Coast gangster stuff at all. And not to say that you really had to, because it was around. You would just hear it. It's like trying to tell people that I don't, there's certain things that I don't really ever need to go out and actually seek, because it's already around me all the time. So in fact, when I can get away from it, that makes me so much happier. When I can go somewhere and not hear certain strains of pop music or what have you, I prefer that, because there's nothing I have to do to find it, because it's always just buzzing around me. And so I took him to that concert. I took him with me. I was his conduit to metal for everything. And it's so funny because we're at this concert and we're in the mosh pit together. We're all this stuff. And at some point, because these things happen, stuff falls off of someone's person or whatever, and they fight it off the floor. And, you know, gets chucked into the crowd backwards, whatever. And it's similar to this is going into a cry story kind of. And someone's wallet chain had fallen off, and someone had grabbed it and slung it, and it just like went airborne and it landed and it hit my friend Chris in the head. It didn't do any damage, but I just remember him just going, "Of course." I, the hip-hop guy, goes to the metal show, and when the thing goes flying in the air, what does it hit? It has to hit me, because I'm the thing that's, that doesn't belong here.
That's so funny. That's so funny. Talk to me about being a metal athlete. You have to be the most extreme metal athlete out there. Everyone's been telling me that I have to have a conversation with you because you are the most metal athlete.
I even have an award for it.
Do you? That's amazing. Who gave you that?
Revolver, Golden God cool. Awards. Yes, I've been nominated, I think, even two times before that, but it's a popularity contest, so I wasn't going to beat out this person or that person because they were just way more above board in the mainstream consciousness. But I'm just like, there's no way that they're at the Dollhouse watching someone play with like 15 people, or they weren't there at the Knitting Factory before it closed in Hollywood watching Goat Whore and Lair the Minotaur. Like, no. No, that wasn't the case.
Why is it so important to, it's like a big part of your identity. It's a big part of what you portray. Why do you do that? Why is it so important that everyone knows that Josh Barnett is a metalhead?
I mean, is it important that they know it? I guess if you can't escape it, and that it is just part of who I am. And so if you didn't know it, it's because you're not paying attention. It's not something I have to proclaim because it is just part of my raison d'etre. So, metal to me, it just has always spoke to me in a way that other music didn't. I mean, and I am someone that loves music on a lot of different levels, and I like way more than I dislike in terms of even genres. So at any given moment I could have a conversation and or get somebody's interests and then feed them different types of music to reach out to them. But metal to me was just the best. And I've made this conversation piece with some friends before, and I'm like, you know what? Metal is the most DIY and hardcore of all types of genres of music. And immediately the argument would come back, punk. And I'm like, nah. Punk is not as grassroots as you think. Punk knows that, like, these kids will go and they'll play punk music poorly. They'll play their instruments poorly. They know that there is a possibility that they can get above the DIY ceiling and end up in mainstream.
That's correct.
That there is a possibility that this can take them into the larger ethos of music and mainstream culture. If you play in an extreme metal band, not only are you going to probably have to be spending the entirety of your life mastering an instrument at a level, at a very high level, you also realize that the ability to even really get up to any level of notoriety is slim, and it's definitely not going to be in the popular consciousness. You are not doing this because you're going to, because you figure that there's a possibility of being overly rich and known throughout the entire popular consciousness. In fact, part of the thing about metal that is so great is that, one, it's highly exclusory and yet inclusive at the same time. It's like there's a barrier of entry, and once you get past it, it's like, hey man, if you're metal, you're with us.
Yep.
And people are like, wow, it's really exclusive. I go, in a sense, if you really like the music, then you're in. But the music also is like, we don't want you to come. You know, we're going to push you. We're going to make this so wild and out there at times to your normal person that they're just like, they're repelled by it. They're repulsed by the whole thing if they can't get into what the ethos, that magic below the surface is. But if you do, come on, you know, we're all about it. And so to me, the amount of what you're putting on the line to be an extreme metal musician, knowing what payoff, or I could say what little financial payoff per se, little notoriety payoff on the broader, general scale is going to be, and yet you still push into this, that shows like real passion. That shows, no, you're not just a college kid who took some sociology courses and now you're all fired up and you want to sing songs about this or that. No, you're a person that is deep into something that is cannot be just swayed away, or you don't just grow out of. And that to me spoke about the idea of like death to false metal, about trueness. I loved it. And you can explore so many different ways of thinking and ideas and concepts in metal, and it's all allowed. I mean, there's like nowhere you can't go with metal. But that's not the same with other genres. Like you can push into certain areas that extreme metal will go, and these other genres are like, no, that's not okay. We can't do that. That's never going to work. We're going to completely veto this. And metal is like, nah, if it works, it works. And it's fine. Go for it.
It's a beautiful community. It's a beautiful, beautiful exclusive club that I'm very happy to be a part of.
Have you ever seen that? There's a picture of a Bolt Thrower concert, and there's a kid in a wheelchair being crowd surfed by all the metalheads. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, that will not happen other places in general, in my opinion. I mean, and even then if you were at a pop music show, like maybe they might do it or what have you, but there's no danger being that crowd in general. Whereas this kid in the wheelchair is like, I don't give a fuck.
He's a part of the
community. I'm here. Yeah. This is, you know, if you knock me over, I know you're going to pick me up and step on my hand, but whatever. It's like, I'm still here for it. And everyone's like, dude, we got your back.
I played a fest in the Netherlands, and there was a dude in a wheelchair in the circle pit, and people were pushing him, pushing him. It was amazing. One of my favorite memories playing gigs. Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's so badass. I mean, that is... And I try to explain to people the violence of the mosh pit is voluntary. Mm-hmm. And yet except for the rare occasion, everybody's there to keep you going. Mm-hmm. They don't want you to get wrecked. They don't want in a way that takes you out of the whole thing. They don't want you to, you know, if you fall down, you get picked up. Everybody's the same in the pit.
Do you still pit? Is that something you still do?
No, but there have been occasions, and some songs make you want to just lose your goddamn mind, and there's just not much you can do about it. Or there's moments where I was at an Exodus show in Irvine at the Observatory, and Rob Dukes was frontman at the time. He's a friend of mine, and he sees me up at the top of the little thing watching the show, and he's like, he calls me dead out, tells me to get in the pit, and it's like, so there I go. You know what I mean? It's like, gotta happen.
Let's talk about being a fighter. I have never been in a fight, ever. I've never, maybe once in high school, but it was like so minimal and we hardly hit each other. So I've never truly been punched in the face. So I'm interested in why you fight, why you still fight. Not your story of how you got into fighting, but why do you still fight? Is it as important to you as the metal identity to be a fighter?
Well, you know, the things that are associated with me as far as what someone would say, identify my person, it is it's gestalt, and so everything has to every separate or even seemingly disparate aspect of who I am comes together to form the nucleus of my being. And so there is no anything without one of these pieces, and all these pieces together make me a greater than the parts themselves. And fighting, I was drawn to it, and just like metal, just like, it's not that there are no conscious choices in some of these, and these things that I take into myself, but there's nothing about trying to craft who I am. And I really haven't spent any time on that ever in life, which at times was really difficult as a kid, and trying to understand that, but, and for others to understand that as well. But I'm born to fight, period. I don't have a concern about damage to me or others. And But I also find a nobility in an honor in combat that allows me to actually view these things as the most sincere and love, place of love in the world than otherwise. You know, I mean, the last guy I fought in a bare knuckle match, you know, I felt like in those moments, in that aspect of the ring, we were brothers and we had love, real love. And it wasn't fake. I didn't get anything from him. Like, I didn't need anything from him. No item, no clout, no nothing. Like, there was no exchange in any sense of the idea of I'm giving something to him that would give that, you know, for my benefit and his. It was just, no, the exchange was combat and real emotion and sincerity. And to me, it's kind of beautiful. It's very beautiful, but I know that it's not for everybody, although I am very much of the mindset, especially people kept asking me about these Triller fights with Jake Paul and all this kind of stuff. And I go, well, you know, everybody, the first reaction is people want to say, oh, well, this is a joke. It diminishes and demeans fighting, and turns it into just a spectacle and all these sort of things. And I go, yeah, I understand that sentiment. But at the same time, anything that puts another person in the ring to punch and get punched, I support it, because I think that it is a place where you can really see who you truly are. And if you're paying attention, you can use that to fully develop yourself into your best version.
Very, very, very interesting. You mentioned that there's a lot of respect in the ring. Is there times when you actually dislike your opponent? Is it hard to get in there with respect? Is there a time that you actually want to hurt someone, and when there's like beef between the two of you? I don't know. How does that work go down?
I mean, it runs the gamut of anything that you can think of as far as human beings, as far as how human beings interact with each other. And it's, you can have people that are out there powering themselves on a persona instead of being as true to who they really are, because they want the accomplishment and the achievement and perhaps even say the trappings that would come from the victory enough to find a way to will themselves into this position. But eventually that person will come to Jesus moment when the rubber will meet the road and they really have to come to terms with who they really are and what's really at that core. And you'll watch them, they'll show up and they'll collapse because it was built on something that wasn't actually in their core being. And sometimes you do get in the ring and you dislike a guy. You dislike the way that they've approached the whole process. There have been some people where it's been rare, but there have been some people where I actually did not like them leading into the fight. Often, and it's kind of a cliche in fighting, and then afterwards, regardless of the tete-a-tete prior, people like each other after the fact. They have a certain respect that they've now earned out of each, and it changes the way that they view the opponent. But lots of people have there's a lot of variance in how they compete. And there's plenty of people that get in the ring as fighters and their job is to just win a fight, win a competition, win a game. And that's, you know, fine for them. And I'm not here to say that that's the wrong way of doing anything, but I've never been that way. I never wanted to go out and game a system. I never wanted to go out and do what was needed to just win a competition. When I show up to destroy. And that is just who I am. And I expect it in return. I don't do anything without expecting that it is possible or necessary for it to be done to me the same. So my rhetoric has always been, or I should say my position is always like, the only thing that stops me is a ref gets in the way and that's it. And I have who's in my corner and everybody else is my enemy.
The War Master. I love it.
Well, I mean, and that's another thing. It's like, you don't get to choose your nickname. It has to be given to you.
That is true.
people that give themselves their own nicknames are always just insufferable. And the whole concept of it, it just feels so false, right? So since we're talking metal, and Bolt Thrower gave me the nickname the War Master, and I'm like, well, fuck, I guess it sticks, you know, and I'm getting old. I'm not a baby-faced assassin anymore. There's too many scars. My nose goes too many different directions, too many gray hairs, and... yeah, okay. Well, if they say it, then it must be true, I guess. So,
but you've owned it, and it's amazing, and it's the perfect name for you. So,
well, I wouldn't think Carl and Joe and you know and the crew that I don't think that they would say it if it didn't. Like, I would trust in their judgment on such a thing, being that you know, we both understood the source material from like Warhammer and all that kind of stuff, but also. I mean, hell, they wrote the song. They wrote the album. They're not going to be flippant with such a thing like that.
How about your when you're training and you're out with other athletes, do you sometimes annoy them with the metal? Why is there not more metalhead? We talked about this a little bit before we started recording. Why isn't there more metalhead athletes out there?
I think there's a lot of people that like Metallica. You know what I mean? I think there's a lot of people that they're into the more mainstream metal stuff. And I think that's, you know, I'm not here to to get real snobbish with them, but, extreme metal, they're out there, but also let's say if it's the UFC specifically, the UFC doesn't want that music played. And even though, you know, I had been walking out to Bolt Thrower for years. When I went back to the UFC and they're asking me for my first fight, well, what do you want to walk to the ring to? And I said, well, the Fourth Crusade by Bolt Thrower. And the first response I got was, you know, this is kind of, you know, this doesn't really work. Or this is a little bit too whatever, whatever. Is there another song by this band maybe that you could come out by? And I'm just thinking... It's not going to be any less brutal. It's Bolt Thrower. Like, what are you talking about? Do you think that they made this one song this way and the rest of it's all Celine Dion ballads? I mean, what the fuck? Or like, it's all, no, it's not. You're not going to find anything different. It's like a different song. Well, do I take the more lo-fi recordings off of Realm of Chaos, or do I do In Battle There Is No Law? Do I go to Peel Sessions? I mean, where do you think this is? I don't know what you mean. Do you want higher production? I'll go to their last album. And, you don't like Andy Wales drumming? Well, you know, I love, you know, Kitty, man, rest in peace. But is that it? Oh, we could do a Kitty song. I don't care. but my response was it's not going to be any different. And this is a song I've been coming out to. Everybody knows me for this kind of music, and even for my specific association to this band. And it's either going to be this or it's dead silence. I want nothing played.
Good for you.
So I walk out to Bolt Thrower, and hey, man, I even got this same static on the next fight I had. And I'm just going, you got to be kidding me. This is 2 days before a fight. This is dumb. But I also try to make a real concerted effort when I show up at the venue call. I go to the fucking the audio board and I go, hey, when I come out, you crank this up because I want to hear those drums at the start of Fourth Crusade. Just I want people's hearts to want to be shook out of their goddamn mouths.
Amazing. Amazing.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hopsheads? I just want to take a little moment about Cryptopsy's upcoming tours. That's right, I'm talking about the Scream of Perseverance tour and our headliner dates that coincide with that tour called As Summer Burns. The Scream of Perseverance tour is kicking off at the end of May and runs all the way until the end of June. We are supporting the mighty Death to All. We are going all over the United States and we are hitting some of Canada. So excited to be honoring the legendary music of death alongside amazing musicians that performed on these albums. Even more stoked to be doing some headliner dates in some cities that I've actually never played in. If you are planning to come to any of these shows, You should definitely grab your tickets by going to voxandhops.com/summer, and you will be able to grab all of your tickets there. That's voxandhops.com/summer. Do it, people. Come hang out with me. Enjoy life, metal, and craft beer in your hometown. Come to a show. We're going to have a great time. Now, enough about all of that. Let's get back to the episode.
Has there ever been a super band, a band that you're a fan of that has also been a fan of you, like a mutual admiration that has surprised you?
All the time. And I'll preface some of this is that I don't think of myself. I know that I'm known by people for the things that I do. I know that I work in the public sphere and that through fighting, podcasts, I work in media. So I understand that. And I completely accept being somebody in the public eye, even if it's, you know, I'm not Will Smith, but we work in the same genre of stuff. We work in the same environments. I accept that. But I never did any of this to be famous or known. And anything I ever do in media to ever increase those sort of things are a business decision, not an actual personal decision. I realize that increasing social media numbers is a necessity towards the industry, but I personally don't care at all. That is not a measure of real personal and deeper success and deeper meaningful work. That's not why I do it. So anytime somebody comes up to me and they're a fan, I'm always like, or they recognize me, it's just like, oh, okay. Especially if it's not at something like a fight, right? So if I'm at a fight and someone knows who I am, it's like, well, yeah, of course. I mean, this is what I'm most known for. It makes sense. But if I'm at a Starbucks at 8 o'clock in the morning, my hair looks like shit or whatever, and someone comes up to me in line, I'm like, okay, right. Or if a band comes up and they know me, I'm just, oh, awesome. And, you know, I have a few stories. Like one of them was, so I'm friends with Joel and Toxic Holocaust. And at the time, the old bass player from Canada, God damn it, what's his name?
I can't help you on this. I apologize.
He's a good dude. So he comes out to give me my tickets for on the guest list. And this is on Black. It's the Black. And we were, it was, must have been like 2010 or something like that. And you know, it's a great lineup. Possessed and Marduk and Blood Red Throne and Toxic Holocaust, Danzig, maybe a couple other bands. And we're at the Grove in Anaheim. So I'm standing in line and he comes out, he gives me the tickets, and he goes, hey dude, so we're touring with Marduk and we're having a conference. They're chatting and they're like, oh yeah, Josh Burnett's coming to come watch a show and all this. And he goes, dude, Daniel Mortis hears it and he goes, Josh Burnett's coming? And you go, yeah. And I swear to God, this guy fucking, he smiled. He actually got happy. And I haven't seen this guy smile the whole tour. And, you know, sure enough, I get to meeting Daniel and Morgan and all them, and we just hit it off. And so now when I would come around, and Daniel was a big fan of my work as a fighter. And so, and Marduk is sick. So it's like, you know, getting to meet someone like that and getting to see, like, you know, this most, you know, very revered, very, like, you know, true with all capital letters in a V instead of a U, and like, you know, this is not a fuck around kind of thing. And get to hang out with these guys and see them with that guard down and go like, oh yeah, they're really like sweet, nice individuals that are, you know, they like a lot of the things that just about everybody else likes, you know, and just being blown away because you just never know. Or becoming friends with Johan and Amana Marth because they appreciate the things that you do, but also then, once they get to know you, they get to know you for you. And likewise, getting to meet these other, these people in these bands. I mean, the band is one thing. And of course there's, you know, stage presence and all this kind of stuff, but just getting to really back to say like Daniel from Marduk, one of the funniest things is watching him deal with really, really drunk people making really stupid statements and him just kind of like, he doesn't he never, he just kind of keeps leading him on, like, oh, no, keep going, and just lets them continue to dig their own holes and just provide comedy without realizing it. And just like, oh, yeah, all right, cool. You know, it's not such a big deal. Or getting to meet people like Suffocation on tour and you know, what rad dudes they are.
So cool.
And, you know. Yeah, it's just, I could go on and on and on. And, you know, people like Goat Whore are really close friends of mine. And I don't know. I don't want to go on about all the bands that I'm tight with. But I've been really fortunate to just meet awesome people who we can both meet each other in the sense we don't need anything from one another. We're just there. And if you're cool, you're cool. And that's that. And I think maybe some of that is because extreme metal is what it is, where, you know, you're not gonna, you're that ability to get to that super high, crazy, superficial, massively known ceiling is just doesn't exist. So you have to be there's shitheads and everything, but I don't know. I feel like maybe there's just more sincere people in this, and you got to get up going and seeing really real live music being played. It just, I don't know how there's anything better than that. And watching somebody play a bunch of music they've never written, sing lyrics they don't write, being performed by all, like, a whole ton of people that are session musicians for them. It just feels like I'm watching the fakest thing in the whole world. Going and being in a tiny little venue, watching Marduk or watching Goat Whore, or, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, or watching Internal Corrosion from Whittier. It's amazing. I love it. And it's, I don't know what would be better than that. Hell, speaking of pandemic and how, you know, it has obviously been a brutal on all my friends in the music scene, because selling albums, okay, cool, get a nickel here and there. Spotify plays, maybe you might get some fucking pocket change dumped your way. But touring is where it happens, man. And you don't move merch just when you're not on the road in the same way. And, you know, knowing what the struggle that's put people through. As someone that wants to go to these shows too, I had tickets for Antichrist Siege Machine at some small little venue in L.A., and then it's like, oh, sorry, we're going to have to cancel that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I was just as, like, bummed about that. And then there was also a thing like, oh, we can do this with your tickets or whatever. I'm like, I don't give a shit. Keep the money, man. Like, it's yours. I don't need it. It's fine. But at the same time, then you've got, like, big things like Cycle Las Vegas didn't happen. And that was like, oh, dude, man, that was going to be so awesome to see everybody, all these bands that I'm friends with all coalescing in one place. And I was supposed to go to Uppsala to Watain's show they were going to do. Nope, can travel. A little solitary tear.
Excellent, excellent band, Watain, but you're not missing out on the olfactory experience that goes with a Watain show.
It's, you got to take it, man. You know what you sign up for, so it's all good.
I toured this South America with them and Suffo, and it was lots of fun. Lots of fun.
Yeah.
Something that you've done that it must have been a moment of, I don't know, myself growing up watching Steven Seagal movies, I was like, he was the shit. I thought he was just so goddamn cool. You were actually in a movie with him. Talk to me about that moment. Was that like a moment of surrealness, or was it just another day?
It's all surreal to me, honestly. So even though we're talking about, you know, being friends with bands and whatever, it's surreal to me still. To say, oh, you know, you're friends with this guy. It's like, fuck, this is so weird. How am I even meeting these people? This is insane. Being able to become close friends with Bolt Thrower, you know, you just have to sit back and go, 12-year-old you would have just brains exploded. If you could go back in time to talk to this kid and go, hey, by the way, you're going to go and you're going to do your thing. You're going to create the stuff in life. And through the things that you put into motion, you're actually going to be friends with this guy. Oh yeah, Danzig, you're going to do some security for him for a minute and be friends with him and this. And it's just like, what? You're going to be in movies at some point. You're going to be in one of Steven Seagal. Like, this is insane. How does this life happen? And I'm like, and I don't, I've never tried to create these things. They just exist. Like, I just, if they happen, they happen. If they don't, I just keep moving through the world as I am. And what comes with it. And what doesn't. And that's okay. You just keep moving forward. And so being in a Steven Seagal film, yeah, it's entirely surreal. Being on camera and doing a movie at all, to me, is still, this is pretty cool, you know? My favorite movie in the world is Blade Runner, the Final Cut. And, you know, I just kind of keep things in the perspective of, if I could be Brian James, I could be in Blade Runner in a major supporting role. I could be in The Fifth Element. I could be in Tango and Cass. I could, it's like all these films, and from the lower grade or cheesier to the more, more cult or venerated films. So what? Can you imagine being a part of the process, a piece in helping create some of these things that are so awesome that leave such an impression in the world, even if you're not the star, even if you're not, I mean, even if you could have been the rigger on that or something, this is, all of it is part of the process. And that's so awesome. That's so cool. And if I could star in a film, badass. I mean, it's more responsibility. You've got a lot more weight to carry with it, but even being a co-star or making a cameo or what have you, you're part of this whole thing that creates what it is and helps set the tone and the mood and the experience. And I don't know, man, it's from the smallest to the greatest in doing these things. It never ceases to make me feel like, wow, this is so awesome. This is so incredible. These experiences are the real juice of life. Like, these are the things that you cannot, that cannot be taken from you, that you cannot purchase. You can't buy these things. You, this experience cannot be arbitrarily created. It has to just be what it is.
Those are the best things, when things like that happen. So you can't force anything. When things just happen, it's amazing. Right? Yeah, I love,
like,
that.
All the stuff that happens on tour, all the weird little moments, it's like, you couldn't plan that.
No way.
You couldn't plan this. And it could just be the night on the town afterwards, but it had to be that show in that place at that time with maybe even that this amount of beers and whatever, and then leads into the next thing, and everybody has this moment in time that just never goes away, you know? And you can always roll back to it and be like, wow, I can't believe I was there.
It's beautiful. Let's talk about Bloodsport, your events that you're organizing, that you present. Mm-hmm. Is that all you do? Do everything? You book the bill? Is it all you organizing that?
No. I work with Game Changer Wrestling and Brett Lauderdale. And he reached out to me for the first Bloodsport show ever, which was being done with Matt Riddle, who's in the WWE now. And he was a former UFC fighter. And they wanted me to wrestle on it. Mm-hmm. And I was up for it. But then there was a conflict. And so I couldn't make it. It was simple as that. And I said, sorry, guys, I won't be able to work the show. And this was far enough in line. It wasn't like I was already announced for it or anything like that, pulling off the bill. But after that show, at some point, Matt Riddle got picked up by the WWE. So he went over there. That meant that there was no longer any ability to use him for these shows or to build a show underneath him or what have you as the main attraction. So they came back. Brett came back to me and he said, hey, would you be interested in having this be Josh Barnett's Bloodsport? And I said, yes, but my caveat is that I have to be the guy who books it and agents the matches and blah, blah, blah. I mean, if my name has to be associated with this, then I have to be producing it as well. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it. And he said, sure. So we just have been working together on these projects, and with a lot of trust between the two of us, we just keep making some of the most kick-ass professional wrestling stuff that I can think of out there. And we're up to show number 6. Our last show I felt was fantastic. I wrestled John Moxley in the main event, and it was a very blood-filled, blood-soaked affair.
Yes, it was.
But it was definitely metal as fuck. And the concept about Bloodsport it's not a gimmick. It is stripping down professional wrestling to its most purest, most raw state. Because just like earlier in our conversation when I mentioned that there's some things that I don't have to seek out because it's just everywhere. It's even the same with wrestling. I mean, a lot of the ways that wrestling presents itself and operates these days, I mean, it's all only maybe one degree removed from the next. And it's very much derivative. And for me, I thought, well, this isn't about being anti anything. This is all just pro and building your own thing. And that's what it is. And so I don't need to cut down or try to undermine how anything else about wrestling. I just want to put out the way I see it into the world and draw from the mentors that I've had, like Billy Robinson and Antonio Inoki and Carl Gotch, and put that into this product, that ethos, and let it run. And I feel like we've really made incredible stuff so far. And the athletes have not only far surpassed my expectations nearly every single time, they themselves, as I watch them, continue to graduate in their competence and capabilities, not just in my ring, but in other rings. And watching how we've had so many people seen, well, obviously they've been known about prior to it, but seen in Bloodsport and then end up in WWE or AEW or New Japan. And so part of that is, I think, the raw aspect of this show makes it so you really get to see who that person is, who they are in the ring, like what lies underneath the surface, because there's no skits or promos or ring gear or catchphrases. There's like all the other ancillary stuff is gone. So the only thing that you can rely on is really just what's in here and what the audience and being able to express that to the audience. And I think that gives a professional wrestling company a really good look at what they think that they could do with this person. You know, I'm pretty proud of those that we've graduated on, even though I'd love to keep them. But I'm also just very proud of all the shows that we've made so far, and the fact that we're integrating metal into this whole thing too.
You know,
we're keeping it as metal as possible. We're really fortunate that 5B hooked us up with Josh from Silosis to do all kinds of riff work. At one point, I've had Joel Grind did a song for me and for the event. And a lot of the athletes come out. I mean, we've had Hatebreed, we've got Bolt Thrower, Pig Destroyer. I mean, with this one dude, I asked him, what's your entrance music? And he goes, oh, Godzilla by Blue Oyster Cult. I'm like, sick song, love it, but no. That just seems too corny. So I'm going to pick something for you. And so I'm watching this guy, I'm checking him out and trying to get a vibe. And I just go, you know what? This guy is going to come out too. This dude makes me think of Black Breath's Slaves Beyond Death.
So, nice.
There we go.
Very nice.
Who would have heard? Who would have heard that otherwise? Hardly. I mean,
exactly.
I don't think they're not around anymore, but
no.
Man, that Washington, Entombed Core, just yeah. Brutality. Yeah. Loved it.
I missed them. That's true. I really, really enjoyed.
I only got to see him once at Slide Bar in Fullerton. And I think five songs into the set, like they blew out the entire electrical system and all that, and the fire department came and the show was over. And I just remember I knew it was going to be heavy, but it was exceedingly heavy. I was really blown away at just like how brutal the whole thing was coming off of the monitors. It was like, fuck, okay, I can get with this.
Love it. Warbringer made a Warmaster bourbon, but have you ever thought about doing a Barnett brew?
Yes, and at the moment we are in conversations well, not even just conversations. We're moving forward. We have a plan. I really hope that by, I don't think it could be released this year, maybe, because we're actually going to age it with this, nice. With this group. And I would love to be able to make a real announcement on the our beer project here in the near future. And we're partnering up with a company out in Southern California. And I really do think we have something that really fits with the whole, fits with me, but also fits with what I'm doing in the world of spirits. And it, even though it is going to be a brew, there will be an influence from our mesquite smoked bourbon.
Nice.
So I just don't want to say too much and just in case. So I'm waiting for it to come to fruition. But yes, I want to put Warmaster level beers out there in the world. And it would be my honor for you to be able to indulge in it yourself. And I sampled through their line of the variations that we could go with and stuff that they produce for other people, like even Horace. So it's legit. And, you know, I sampled many a brew and had others, our head distiller and others, we sampled and we tasted and we came to we came to a consensus and we really feel like this is going to be pretty solid.
That's so exciting. I can't wait to see that drop and then taste it. Let's wrap this up. One last question. It probably doesn't happen to you very often because you're a professional athlete. You are take care of your body or control of your body, but every now and then it happens to everyone. What is your hangover cure?
Lots of water, probably whatever desire food wise to a degree, depending on how bad the hangover is. And you know, at the worst of it, I guess just a few cc's of heroin, I mean, just to cut the edge.
Josh, thank you so much hanging out with me, talking about your life, metal and craft beer. I am truly honored. This was a blast. I really appreciate it. Cheers.
Yeah. Cheers, my man.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. Man, did I ever have a blast connecting with Josh. He is just a blast to talk to. He's great to listen to. He's got a lot of insight, a lot of interesting things to say about being a metalhead, about being a metal athlete. I thought that was super interesting, and I really appreciated Josh taking the time to sit down and hang out with me. If you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. You can do that on my website, voxandhops.com, and that's voxandhops.com. And when you do that, you shall receive one email a week containing all of the details of everything that has happened throughout the past week in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, including all the details for any episodes which I've dropped throughout that past week, if I've been a guest on someone else's podcast, all the information of any cool projects I have in the works, such as Brutal North America, as well as the updated links to Thirsty Thursday Hangs and the links to the Brutal Awakenings playlist, which is available on both Apple Music and Spotify and is curated by my man, Jerry Monk, the metal architect himself. So please do me a favor, sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list, because there's just so much going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. I would hate for you to miss a single thing. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. I have one more episode coming up this Friday, but until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.